Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the latest Outsports podcast. It is, the 6th of April already. And I have to say, Sid, one of the best things is when you get your taxes done. I got mine done a week and a half ago, and it's just nice feeling of having it off my back for another year.
We always do it in October. We just punt it till the fall. So I've got another 6 months.
Well, yeah, that's nice, but it's just one of those things that you always feel it's looming over you. You got to look at all the expenses, like, oh, it's done. And I overpaid last year, so that was good news.
That is good news. It's always good news to get a refund.
Well, it's just being applied to next year's taxes, but it's the same difference. But it's like, oh, that's actually not a bad thing. So, although I guess tax day is the 18th this year. It's 3 days later.
Why is that?
Oh, the 15th is on a Saturday, and there's something on, some holiday on Monday or some, whatever reason, it's on the 18th.
That's Easter weekend this year.
Easter weekend, but there's something on Monday the 17th that is a reason that your taxes aren't due until the 18th. But anyway, hope you people don't have to pay too much this year. We got a couple of things to talk about. We're going to start something we hope is a regular feature where we're talking about coming out stories, because we think that's what we do best, and we think that's important. And Sid and I are going to share, God, we've done how many hundreds of them, some of our favorite coming out stories over the years. And our goal is to get some guests on to talk about their coming out experiences. But first, Sid, we got to talk about the thing I guess I'm kind of sick of hearing about, but it's still important. It's a whole fallout in North Carolina over them repealing HB2, the anti-LGBT bill, and replacing it with HB 142, which is basically the another anti-LGBT bill with very few exceptions. We've called it a scam from day one, but it was enough for the NCAA to say it will consider using North Carolina as sites as hosts for championship events, and we'll start knowing this weekend when they start doing events through, I think, from 2019 through 2022, if I believe. And we have written about it. We've had some great columns, guest columns about it. But since this happened a week ago, any more insight into what exactly happened? Was this sort of, rigged up front? Did they know this was going to be the bill, and so they gave a wink, wink, nod, nod to it?
As I've said for years, the NCAA is a fraud on LGBT inclusion. And people keep praising the NCAA, and Lambda Legal gives them a leadership award, and everybody kisses their ass. But they suck on this issue. The fact that they allow member institutions to fire coaches simply for being gay, or expel student athletes simply for being gay, that they allow member institutions to have direct, explicit anti-LGBT policies written in their student handbooks, tells you all you need to know about this. And this little, the little move that they made last year in North Carolina, that was just because their hand was forced. The NBA moved out. All these companies were saying they were going to move out. They had to. I mean, they didn't have a choice. They had a gun to their head. If they didn't move out, that would have been a disaster. So now, like you said at the beginning, you're tired of talking about it. I'm tired of talking about it. People are tired of talking about this issue. Have been, I think, for a while. And so now the NCAA can just kind of, slip out the back door. It was a half-day story in the media, and now nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, and as we said last week, the headlines were bathroom bill repealed, which was technically accurate, but it was factually, in many ways, it did not capture what has actually happened. And so that's all people saw. I saw even some late night comics sort of, oh, they repealed the bathroom bill, and people were applauding. And they didn't follow up with the fact that what they replaced it with was, in many ways, just as bad. You know, one thing that sort of people need to realize is this that it kept a prohibition of HB 2, which is one of the worst things, is that local municipalities could not pass their own LGBT rights ordinances, which is what the city of Charlotte did. And if they had simply repealed HB 2 and gone back to the previous thing, then it would have been up to cities like Charlotte and Raleigh, Durham, wherever, to pass their own, so you could have had some relief in those places. But this makes it prohibited through the 2020 elections, which is even more cynical, that the expiration date is December 1st, but then even then, it can be extended indefinitely, you know, at the whim of the legislature. So it really is they achieved what they wanted to achieve, was getting the word repeal in headlines on every website in the country. And people are so sick of it now that there's really not much of a protest going on, because people kind of feel there's not much they can do. We had a great letter that you posted yesterday from 166 former and current college athletes asking them to pull events out of North Carolina. Rep. Joe Kennedy of Massachusetts wrote some really strong letter beforehand about it, and basically they're just going to ignore it.
There isn't an LGBT organization. There isn't an LGBT community leader. There isn't an LGBT athlete. There isn't an LGBT coach that I have seen say anything but this is continued codification of discrimination against the LGBT community. I have not seen a single LGBT person say it's anything but continued codified discrimination. For the NCAA to ignore the voice of every single LGBT person in this conversation and go their own direction. I sound like a broken record, and I have for years. The NCAA is fraud. They don't care. They don't care about LGBT people. They don't care about our inclusion. They don't care about our equality. Now, in a couple of weeks, they'll host their inclusion forum, and everyone will go, and everyone will talk. But the fact of the matter is, the NCAA doesn't do anything on LGBT issues. They put out some manuals, and they have a couple think tanks. But they don't do anything. So, again, people are surprised that this happened. People are telling me that it couldn't happen. It's the NCAA. They don't care about us.
Oh, yeah, you and I were not the ones saying it wouldn't happen. We even actually had a private email exchange where I said, yeah, they'll cave, and you said you agree. And people need to remember, the NCAA is basically a cartel set up to manage sports at the NCAA. It's first and primary thing is a business thing. It's not, you know, they make all this noise about student-athletes, and they have all these stupid rules about, you know, you can't buy a kid whatever, a slice of pizza or something, or else it's a recruiting violation. At the same time, coaches could make millions on shoe contracts. But it's basically big business is what it is, and big business money rules. And North Carolina is a big player in the NCAA, especially in college basketball, and that's what's going to win out. And so I'm convinced that the NCAA knew about the repeal language ahead of time and gave their basic tacit admission. And it's amazing when they issue a statement this week and they say they're reluctantly, like someone's forcing them to do this. Ridiculous. And then the woman who sponsoring a similar bill in Texas is crowing now how, you know, her bill will pass NCAA muster. Now, fortunately, that bill sort of stuck in the House in Texas, so we're not sure that's going to pass, but she thought, oh, this is great. So the people who are against LGBT rights get how this is going to be, you know, used. And so we'll see. I'm curious to see what events they wind up giving to North Carolina and when. Are they going to skip 2019 as sort of a, you know, whatever?
No.
All of these, are they going to start just doing it immediately?
It's full steam ahead. Again, we have to stop thinking of the NCAA as as in any way considering what's good for the LGBT community when it makes its policies. Again, the only reason they left North Carolina was because the NBA did and made a big stink about it. That's the only reason. And a bunch of other companies did and made big stinks about it. The NCAA said, no, we're good here. They would have looked – that would have been a disastrous business decision. It wasn't tech people. It was a business decision, like you said. So we have to stop even considering that they will do what's best for the community. It's full steam ahead with North Carolina. It's over. This is over.
Well, I agree. I think we'll keep writing about it, but bottom line is come Saturday, whenever they make the decision, once we see the sites, there's not much that anyone's going to do about this, and at least through 2020, and who knows what the election to 2020 will be, if there'll be a whole new slate in North Carolina in the legislature, and we now know the governor, a Democrat, is a betrayal of LGBT people, so we'll deal with that. But let's talk about something on a more upbeat note, because one of the things we do is, I think you were telling me, and you made a point that I hadn't thought about, that OutSports probably has told more coming out stories than any other media outlet in history, because we have so many original coming out stories. I mean, there are, you know, every other media covers every big person who comes out, you know, as recently as yesterday with Barry Manilow. But
I would have sworn that he was out already. If Howard Bragman is his longtime associate, and I think he works with him too, and or has at least, and I was stunned to hear that he was not out.
Well, also, I mean, 'cause I think I had known, because you hear certain people over the, oh yeah, they're gay, and I just assumed he had been public about it. But good for him. I mean, kind of better late than never in a sense. But he has a partner, and the same thing. I thought, I thought he had already come out years ago, but I mean, there you go. But anyway, we've told more coming out stories than any publication probably ever has, and we are going to try. We may switch the time we do this and try to get people. It's hard to get people on a work day to be free to talk, but I wanted to talk about in the last 15 years or so, what are some of your favorite coming out stories? It doesn't have to be anything monumental. It could be one that kind of just struck you in a different way, and I thought we'd just kind of spend the rest of the podcast kind of bopping back and forth with people, bring up some memories of both recent people and people that came out years ago. I'll let you start. Anyone that you want to highlight first?
Well, I'm going to highlight the two that we had this week, because they both really struck me in different ways. The one we had today of Michael Caster, who works at the NFL front office, the way he crafted the story, and he did it all on his own, was, he really set up these two lives that he feels he has had to live. His just straight, for lack of a better word, life at the NFL, where he avoids questions about what he's doing that weekend, so he doesn't have to talk about his gay friends or the gay bars he's going to, and then his other life, which is he's a gay guy in New York City, and talking about the power of straightness in sports culture, that people in the NFL front office aren't homophobic, they're just really, really straight, and everything is straight. And the conversations are straight, and there just isn't this entry point for a gay guy to jump in and talk about his life. We've talked at OutSports, and many people have at OutSports, about the issue that LGBT people have in sports isn't necessarily this overt homophobia, but the constant overt straightness that you just don't relate to. And so I thought that Michael's piece today was really great and really insightful into that dynamic in sports.
Yeah, and it's I know who he is. Meaning, I saw the face. And I said, "Oh, he played flag football." So, and I don't really know Michael at all. But in reading the story, it is interesting that heterosexuality is assumed. The default when guys are out, when they're younger, you know, you're dating anyone and they mean a woman. And so people often have to kind of juggle those two, and he was able to sort of do it, although, you know, but in a way that does have a certain impact on people when you feel you kind of have to maybe kind of censor yourself in certain environments. And so the fact that he sort of totally come out kind of publicly, I think, is fantastic. Sad, poor guy's a Jets fan, so that's actually the thing that made me saddest reading the story.
Right. Pretty sad.
But, yeah, I mean, those, and I think we've talked to a lot of people who are like that, and there are people who have this zone of privacy they feel, but in some ways the zone of privacy makes them feel that they really have to censor themselves, and I think that's the difference. So I thought that story kind of illustrated something that is a lot more common, because there's a lot more people like Michael in the sports world than are people who are, like, totally out everywhere. And then the second one, I'm assuming you're talking about Jacob, the cheerleader at Michigan State. That was a fantastic story.
Yeah, you know, we ask these athletes to write their own stories, and we give them a little direction. And at first I had wanted him, and he has a teammate who's a good friend of his who's also gay on the team. And I'm not outing him. He's very out on social media. So, and I wanted them to write a joint story. And Jacob came back, and he's like, "Well, I want to write my own story." And I was like, "Okay, yeah, fine." And we don't know what we're going to open up. We start reading these people's stories. And I was reading it, I think it was over the weekend, maybe on Saturday, crying. Like, this kid, I mean, talking about the suicide of his high school boyfriend while he's in high school was just, it was gut-wrenching. And the power that being a cheerleader, being on this cheerleading team, the power that had in his life, and as far as support and giving him inner strength, the way he talked about that was just so. I just thought it was so revealing about you know just how important sports are in people's lives, and obviously just I mean just what a gut-wrenching story about losing, you know, a love at the age of 17. I can't even imagine.
Well, and it brought me back to Billy Beane, the baseball player, now a baseball executive, who was a gay player but didn't come out till after retired. And Billy lost his partner while he was playing with the Padres. His partner died, I believe, I think it was AIDS he died of. But Billy had to mourn privately. And Billy could not go and share with his teammates the pain he was going through. I think he kind of played the day his partner died. And I thought, in a sense, for someone like Jacob, the change to be able to use your team to give you that emotional support. And I think Billy had said that, you know, after the fact that, you know, his teammates probably would have been very supportive, but he felt at the time, back in the 90s, that he kind of had to just sort of keep all this in. And so I think that in Jacob's case, it was one of those things where the team itself proved to be something that helped in the healing process. And so I thought that was very moving. I want to go to one of the people I was most proud of, and this is way back, probably 15 years ago, Andrea Zimbardi. She had been playing softball at the University of Florida, and she came to us, said she had been discriminated against by her coach. And she went public with a very detailed sort of story about how she was kicked off her team for being a lesbian. And she wound up getting a settlement with the university. And I thought, this was back like 2004, an honor roll student, and she wasn't going to kind of accept that quietly. And she had a very well-documented case, and she got, I think I did the story on it, she got a lot of supporting stuff from teammates and stuff, and wound up getting a settlement one with it. So, I mean, this is someone back then when it was a lot harder, even in a woman, to kind of be kind of publicly out. She was able to do it. So I think that wasn't a pure coming out story in the sense of her, you know, telling the sort of uplifting story, but it was one that I felt empowered as someone who said, listen, I'm not going to settle for being discriminated against. And she won, and kind of good for her. And I remember her, and that was 13 years ago.
Well, not coming out story doesn't have to be uplifting. You know, it can be very pointed. It can be for a specific reason, like hers. And you know, I think about God, what was his name? James Nutter in Maine, and you know, just talking. His entire story was about just the pain that he was experiencing in sports, and the language that he heard, and the suicide attempts, and you know, so these stories are not. They're not always uplifting. Thankfully, over the last few years, almost all of them are. But you know, there's still a lot of pain in a lot of these stories.
Well, and we see the pain even when they write them now. It's amazing to me how similar so many of the stories are in what the things they feared. It's parents. A lot of it is religion. I think that's the one thing of all the coming out stories. It's probably the single biggest theme that's kind of connected so many of them has been religion and the negative impact it's had on them. You know, going to church every single Sunday and hearing from the pulpit, you know, how bad being a homosexual is and you're going to be sinful. And you hear that when you're 7, 8, 9, 10 years old and you hear it every week. And then you have this realization, oh, Jesus, that's me. It's, you know, I'm editing a story now where religion was the thing that kept this person in the closet and kept him from shunning a gay teammate at his college because he didn't want to be kind of labeled that. It caused him to vote for Proposition 8 in California. I mean, all these things this person did at the time to kind of deny who he was, and it was because of the way he was raised. So I think the religious angle is one that, I mean, it could be, you know, and this person's from Southern California. It doesn't matter with the South, the Midwest. Religion has always been a huge factor in people's struggles to come out.
Religion and language, hearing gay slurs and other homophobic language that, as we've written about a million times, usually the straight athletes don't mean I hate gay people when they say it, but that's what the kids who are gay hear when they hear it. So it's the religion and the language seem to be the two constants that bring LGBT people who are, you know, struggling with being LGBT the most pain.
And what's also interesting is how these stories have a pretty wide geographic level for us. I was thinking about P.J. Painter, the cowboy from Wyoming. Was it Wyoming P.J.'s from originally?
South Dakota.
South Dakota, now lives in Louisville, you know, and grew up basically in the middle of nowhere on a ranch. And yet how his father just embraced him when he told him he was gay and, you know, the love and support he got. So it's not always simply, you know, what you think is the urban thing. And in many ways, we've probably had more stories from people kind of in the heartland, so to speak, than we've had from, you know, New York City or L.A. Maybe because people there feel they can be out and it's not a big deal. But I've kind of noticed some of the geographic diversity of the stories we've done.
People will say to me all the time, in fact, I was talking to Fred Karger. You know who he is? He's at Ranford. "Quote unquote," ran for president a couple of years ago.
No, I don't know.
As a Republican, Fred Karger, he ran for president the year Romney got the nomination. He's a rich guy and decided he's going to run for millionaire. Anyway, he's gay, and I was talking to him at this Out magazine party last week, and he, like so many other people, start telling me how difficult it is to be gay when you're not living in New York and Los Angeles. And I've started really challenging these people and talking to them about the athletes that we meet. And certainly coming out can be very difficult anywhere. And certainly the fear that you have is probably higher in rural Alabama than it is growing up in West Hollywood, certainly. But once these people are out, so many of them, not all, but so many of them, Dalton Maldonado in Kentucky and Alan Gendro in Tennessee, and we have so many examples of people in unlikely places being accepted by their teammates and or their coaches and or their friends and or their family. And I think that's one of the things that's opened my eyes is about how you know, places that we just assume are these horrible homophobic places find ways to accept these people, these kids, when they come out.
Well, here's some examples just from 2015, our out athletes list. Oklahoma University, Idaho, East Carolina, Shippensburg, which
Erskine.
Is the middle of the – what?
Erskine, the two kids at Erskine College, a Christian school in rural South Carolina, totally accepted by the campus. The students, the faculty, the coaches, the teammates – virtually no problems except for the stupid board of trustees, which is a bunch of old people in suits.
Yeah, and again, when we talk about it, we always get people, oh, you don't know what it's like. Well, we do know what it's like, and we've never said homophobia is cured or solved or doesn't exist, but it is simply not true that you cannot be accepted if you come out these days. It's been proven over and over again that you can come out in some of the most unlikely places and get acceptance. And I think that's what these stories kind of keep drumming home, that it is possible. And there are people that we have counseled to not come out because we don't think they're ready, we don't think the support is there. So we're not Pollyannish about, you know, when we work with these LGBT people in sports, we make it very clear, once the story's running, it's not going to unrun. So if you have any second thoughts, you're better off not running it. And you know, there are some people that we know clearly aren't ready to tell their story, or maybe the reaction wouldn't be such, so you kind of hold off on it. But it is amazing how empowering people have felt just from reading other stories, which always leads to other stories. But, yeah, I think the diversity to me is what's really been the most surprising, especially in places what you might call sort of the Corn Belt up to, like, you know, the Rocky Mountain area. That's sort of, you know, Midwest, Kansas, Oklahoma, Iowa, more so than the South. It still seems the South is one where we've had the fewest number of out athletes. Would you agree?
I don't know. You know, I mapped out who came out on OutSports and other publications, came out publicly last year, and I'll have to take a look at it again. I put it on Twitter. I remember, obviously, the mountain states and the plain states are tough, but there's just not a lot of people there. I mean, they're just, you know, compared to the Northeast. And, you know, the one place that I'm surprised we don't have more people is Southern California. I mean, you got, what, 20 million people here? And I think last year, like, four people came out publicly that we knew of. It just that to me surprised. You got tons in the New York City area, but SoCal just not a lot. That's the one that surprises me.
I wonder if there are some people who are maybe in Southern California on certain the big campuses. It's simply such a non-issue that people don't feel a need to go public. I'm just guessing because we've know of people, and for whatever reason, they've not been driven, and maybe because they have a more active social gay circle. I mean, if you're gay in Southern California, I mean, just pop open Grindr, for example, and you can go five blocks, and you get a whole new list of people. Whereas in a lot of these smaller places, it is not as easy to meet people, and you kind of maybe feel a little more isolated. But I'm just speculating, but we also don't get a lot from, you know, Chicago, for example. I'm just wondering if the availability of just gay outlets make people in Southern California feel that they're comfortable the way they are and don't have to feel a need to tell a story publicly.
Yeah, that's entirely possible, because a lot of times, you know, these people tell their stories because they know that we still have a ways to go, and that the importance of inspiration in the lives of other LGBT youth is key. And I guess when you're surrounded by LGBT people who are totally out, you might lose a little perspective that you still need to inspire people.
Yeah, well, that's all the inspiration we have time for. We're going to keep running stories, and if you're an LGBT person in sports and want to tell your story, send us an email. That's outsports@gmail.com, and we will talk to you next week.